He had a prayer that he put with those things. He said, God, please take me to a place where I am gladly willing to have my relationship with you be more important than my relationship with my image. My money, my property, prestige, whatever. So those are questions to answer yourself with. And usually at this point, Missy and I go on to talk about, or I go on to talk about on page 53 was the answer on why I said to you what I did, that yes, I'm doing all right, versus when you ask God brought me as far as he can, I'd say, God, I hope not. So one part of my brain said, I'm okay. The other part of my brain said, God, I hope not. And was teachable, was awake, was aware that perhaps I hadn't arrived anywhere. And it came with, you know, my sponsor always told me the answer is always on the next page. And so on the next page in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it has a couple of things that are brought out. In the middle paragraph, it talks about that when I become crushed by a self-imposed crisis, I cannot postpone or evade. I had to fearlessly face the proposition that either God is everything or else God is nothing. God either is or he isn't. What's my choice going to be? In other words, am I going to surrender? Am I going to say I can't figure it out? Or am I going to try to still figure it out? So, and if I do, that means God doesn't really exist for me. I really don't have a friend that cares about me. I know for a fact that if I asked Missy to come down here tonight, she'd find a plane. She hates to fly. If I was that dire, she'd be here and vice versa. When she had issues with there, that she lost a husband a couple of years back, and he wasn't only her husband. He was everybody's pal. We loved him with our heart and soul. And I said to her, I'm there today or I'm there later. You're going to have a lot of people around. By the way, I'm a grief counselor, so I know a little bit about grief. And I said, you're going to have a lot of people around supporting you. Maybe in a month or two, you'll want me back. And when I did go back, she had a memorial service, and I was with her for 2 or 3 weeks as we processed through some stuff. So in other words, am I willing right now to believe that my God can come to me at that to sustain me? Or do I think that I have to do this all by myself? Each step will bring you closer into a relationship with that presence whereby you can be alone, but by God, you won't be lonely. Okay? You won't be lonely. Once you get the experience of feeling the presence of the presence, you're going to want no other relationship. That's my experience and those of many that I know. Don, have you got anything you want to put in here?
Sorry. Not at the moment, Mary. I'm just appreciating what you're having to say. I do have all the paperwork ready if you need it.
Good. Thanks, sweetie. Okay. So what I found also on that page below that, whether God is or God isn't, is the talk about reason. And it said that as I read this paragraph, you can read it yourselves. If you have a big book, it's page 53 and it goes to 54. And I talk about what I realized that it said, some of us have already walked far over the bridge of reason toward the desired shore of faith. Remember I told you I had about 20 years of reason, rationale, and logic. I went to the meetings. I had the sponsees. I had a sponsor. I spoke. I did 12-step work, I did service, I did the deal here, okay? And so as I read this, it went on and it said, friendly hands had stretched out and welcome. I was grateful that reason had brought me so far. And when I read that, I had 20 years or so, and I realized that reason was capitalized in that sentence. And it has no need to be capitalized. And why do you capitalize anything in a sentence? It means that it's important. It's like you worship it. And of course, I was worshiping this reason had brought me so far up to 20 years. But somehow I couldn't quite step ashore. Perhaps I had been leaning too heavily on reason, rationale, and logic that last mile. And I didn't want to lose that. And so it goes on to talk about reason until at the bottom of page 54, it says, hence, I saw that reason, which is now a little r, reason isn't everything. Neither is reason, as most of us use it, entirely dependable, though it emanate from our best minds. Okay. I pondered that for quite a while to see that and what had happened for me is that reason, logic, and rationale, as I pointed out to you, when I answered the questions, I was going back to compared to this, yeah, I'm doing good. And when I say compared to this, I'm doing good, I then don't have to move, do I? I don't have to grow. I have arrived. I'm fine. Thank you. I'm not teachable at all. Why would I have to listen to anything? Because I already know everything. So I don't have any room for movement, especially in spirituality. And as I said before, in our book, it says spiritual progress is what we claim. We don't claim intellectual enlightenment. So my progress has, yes, I have progressed from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body in regard to personal relationships and feelings and so forth. But have I gotten as far as God wants me? God, I hope not. And that point, there's another line in our big book, and it's page 129, and it talks about father. This father had, it's talking, it's family after, I think. What is it? Family after. Good girl. And it says something like, father feels he has struck something better than gold. For a time, he may try to hug the new treasure to himself. He may not see at once that he is barely, now listen to this, he's barely scratched a limit. It's limitless. It's a limitless load, which will pay me dividends only if I mine it. In other words, do the drill, do the steps over and over for the rest of my life and insist on giving the whole thing away, giving the entire product away. And that's why, even though I don't want to do this, I'll give it all to you because I'm after the dividends. I want it all, and it's limitless. And if I continue to do this drill, God will provide me with whatever I need, with whatever problem arrives. But if I try to hug this to myself and not give back to you people, and you people only hug what you've got to yourself, and you don't give it to me, I'm going to die. And that's why it's a we program. That's why we're together, why we need each other more than anything. So I don't have all the answers by any means, but I have a solution that's been working for me for a while that has helped me to get some emotional sobriety in different areas of my life. So what we're going to do, what time is it? We're going to take a 10-minute break, and then I'm going to bring you through a demonstration of the third and fourth step in regard to the pandemic, because my life has been unmanageable on that. So that's what I'm going to demonstrate today on how the steps can move into your life. So is this good? 10 minutes, you ladies and gentlemen, please let's just whatever. I'll see you about 12 minutes past five. How's that?
Great. Works. Thank you, Mary.
Hi there. Well, I'm going to open this session with set aside prayer. God, please help me to set aside everything I know, everything I think I know about myself, the 12 steps, this workshop, and you, God, so that I may have an open mind, an open heart, a new experience, and please let me see the truth. Thank you. Okay. Well, I just kind of want to throw in a couple of things here. Remember I told you that we need to find a God. So that means we're going to talk about things that are moral as well as spiritual. And I needed to find a God that I felt in order to do these program, this program other than in my head. I realized when in Bill's story, his best friend, Abby, comes to visit, and Bill said there was something in his eyes. He was different. And that something within his eyes, I have seen in the heroes in my recovery. I saw it in Sybil's eyes. I saw it in my sponsor's eyes. It's a man by the name of Don Pritz. I've seen it in his eyes. In fact, I didn't even know who he was. I just started crying when I saw his eyes because I knew that he had God on board, that there was a presence that he carried. I see it in Don C's eyes. I see it in many, many of my sponsees. I get the opportunity to see their soul come alive, and it shines in them. The gals that I sponsor, a lot of them are, or not a lot, but quite a few here this today. There's something in their eyes that I get to see. You know, they keep thinking they can hide from me, but their windows are, their eyes are windows to their soul. And I believe this illness is a soul sickness. And I feel as though what we're trying to do here is we're trying to move away those things that are blocking us from feeling that presence, the sunlight of the spirit. So when I was reading on page 55 that about this God, it talks about that that I find the great reality. So there's a great reality deep down within me. That's where it's going to be found. And it says that in the last analysis, it is only there that he can be found. And it is so with me and so with all of us. So in all of us, there is a presence that you feel. And you already know that. You know that if you're kid comes in, you haven't seen him for a while. You know if your dog comes in, you know if you've seen a son, you'll get like this catch, and there's an energy that you connect with, and you, the presence is present all the time. Only the thing that goes between my ears, the head, blocks that from me feeling. So our big book talks about the fourth step as something that will clear away the wreckage of our past, so to speak, but it will unblock what is blocking me from the sunlight of the spirit. And that's what this fourth step's going to be. So what happened for me when I started to see that it's deep down inside what I'm trying to find, and it's a connection with the presence, and it's always been there. I think we've always had it. And I sometimes liken us into being like an acorn. Have you ever seen an acorn nut? It's this little nut, and it's absolutely smooth, and it has this little hard cap on it. It's like a little hat that stays, that grows on that acorn. And I believe that when we come into the program, we have this little cap on that we have been, it's been made from what my parents thought I should be doing, what my school teachers, what my, if I had a spiritual advisor or minister or rabbi or whatever they thought, what society wants you to do. I was raised very Boston proper, and that has a lot in that cap, but proper nearly killed me. And so there was a lot of things. And then one day I was gifted by being 12 stepped into this program, and it was like somebody took a hammer and hit that little cap, and a sliver of that cap came off and a little light came in. And as the years have gone on, there's little pieces of that acorn cap that keeps coming off, and it allows me to connect with that power deep down inside of me that is hopefully guiding me in most of my things. I love what I've been reading to you is a chapter in the big book called We Agnostics. And I remember I finally realized my sponsor would say, In what area of your life are you agnostic? And I use the definition of Ann Smith, and that is living independently from God. So in what area of my life am I living independent from God? Not that I wake up and say, I'm going to live independent from God. I don't consciously do that. But I have not even asked God in. I had a recent experience here. This year has been hell, hasn't it? I mean, really. But I started it off very, very sick. In fact, some of my friends think I had the thing, the big pandemic. But, and I could have, for all I know. I ended up hot. What does make any difference? But I was very, very sick. And I remember there was a couple of gals I like a lot. I call them my guppies. And they're friends here. They're new in the program. They're like little guppies, you know, and they think you have some wisdom, I guess, and follow you around or what all. But they're a gift to me. And I had been very ill, and one brought me something, and the other one was coming to sit with me. And she came into the room. I said, I can't talk. I can't do anything. I just have to lay here. And I was so ill. And I nearly died. I think I died about 7 years ago, having the swine flu and double pneumonia. So I know what it's like to be very ill. And I remember I was laying in bed, and I knew I couldn't say a word. And I finally just went deep inside myself, and I said, hey, God, I don't even know what's happening here. I can't even find the G in God. You've got to hang on to me. I can't hang on to you. And it was like at that moment, it was like I fell asleep. And when I woke up, I realized that I had gone to the doctor. I had medicines. I had gone to the hospital. I had had x-rays. I'd done everything humanly possible about this. But I had failed to say, hey, God, you want to help me out with this one? Now, that's 46 years sober. And I didn't consciously do that. I just thought I was doing the right thing, you know? So what I'm trying to say to you is there are areas of my life where I'm agnostic, where I am living independent from God. I don't sometimes even know it until my life gets unmanageable. So, but I don't beat myself up with this crap. I mean, you know, I'm just going to claim spiritual progress when I know it. So it says here, on this next paragraph, it says, hopefully my testimony will sweep away some of your prejudice about a loving God or whatever. Hopefully you'll realize that there is a presence, all right? And it's a kind one, and it's a friend, okay? Friends will be honest with us. Do you know that? Missy gets a little too honest with me, I think. But I'm grateful because she tells me the truth on what things are. I forget one time I called her and I was really upset. She said, we won't do anything for 10 days. I said, 10 days? I never told you 10 days. I said three. What's this 10 day shit that you're telling me? And only by grace did she give me that number, because on the ninth day, I realized if I had gone ahead, it would have been so that I was okay. It wasn't sincere. So trust some of these people telling you something. They're not doing it without some gift of, you know, God there. But I like this part. It says, if my prejudice is put aside, it's going to enable me to think honestly. And it's going to encourage me to search diligently within myself. Not out here, but within myself. Then, and only then, if I wish, it gives me an option here. If I wish, I can then join all of you on the broad highway. And with this attitude, I cannot fail, because the consciousness of my belief is sure to come to me. So if I don't believe, I have to do this all by myself. I fail at that. I really have failed at that, doing things by myself. But if I'm aware there is a presence that is all loving and is a pal, then things change for me. On the bottom of this page, I like how it says his change. He's talking about a demonstration of man, and it says his change of heart was dramatic, convincing, and moving. It doesn't say his change of mind. It says it's change of heart. You see, this program is about changing our heart, our soul, our beliefs, our lifelong conceptions that might not be valid. I might be deluded. And I love the last line in this We Agnostic, and I have found this to be a truism. It says, when I draw close to him, this presence, my pal, my best friend, he discloses himself to me. That's a promise. I have three women that are on here that I've worked with. And I'm here to tell you that presence has disclosed himself to them. Juana. Over and over and over again, that presence has disclosed himself to you. And once that happens, once you have that presence disclosed to you, there's nothing else you want in your life. Is that not true? You ladies, do you deny that? That's true, correct? You have something to say, Dawn?
Hi, Mary, thank you. I was, as you were talking before you went to the break, I, you know, read ahead because I had noted from your talk in, can you hear me?
You're garbled from me.
Put it on gallery. Can anybody else hear me? Garbled?
Yeah.
So, sorry.
One device or two?
Excuse me?
Are you on one device or do you have another device? Because it's garbled and echoey.
Shut off one other device if you've got one going.
Hopefully not. Let me see. I'll put these away.
That's better when you get closer. Okay.
How about that?
Yeah.
I was reading ahead when you went away for the break because I had noted a few things from when we were in Pecos about those two paragraphs that you read about the great reality, searching diligently within. And I liked what you went over. It says, if our testimony sweeps away prejudices, encourages me to search diligently within, then if I wish, I can join you on the broad highway. And I like it because when it says, if, then I have the possibility, and if, which says to me that it just reminds me of that thing that Bill says, that I have to want and need God for him to reveal himself to me. It can't, for me, it hasn't been an experience that has been, of course, sometimes I want God and sometimes I need God, but the times when I think both are present is when I have those profound spiritual experiences that allow me to take another step forward toward that broad highway. And yes, I have had, it's funny because when I, a lot of times when I share, I talk about that thing in Bill's talk where he talks about the moment in the cathedral burst upon him, the significance of it, that he had wanted and needed God. And I've had those moments throughout my life, but I, like Bill, moved on, dismissed them, acted as if nothing happened. And, you know, blew them off as coincidence, happenstance, an odd thing that mattered at that time, but it really wasn't relevant. And then, you know, when I get to a place or a point where, and I too have been confronted with, well, I'll call them the discrepancies of self through this COVID thing. And I mean, I've really hit that place of once again, wanting and needing God as the duo that has the possibility of giving me the hope that you're talking about. And, you know, for the longest time, I came into the program atheist, didn't believe in God, thought God was bad, didn't think it applied to my personal life. It was something in the ether. And when I went to that thing that you talk about, that searching my own experience for something that has proven to be, you know, a God that I can actually work with, do business with. And I realized that it's happened to me time and time and time again. And I dismissed it. And I, you know, I could go through, I can rattle off the top of my head 20 times when that happened, and significant times. And that's the God that I am, you know, becoming ready and willing to trust, wanting and needing for the next. And I always, the option of getting from the bridge of reason to the shore is so profound every time that I'm faced with it. And I liked what you said. I don't beat myself up because I am the girl that thinks she can think her way through everything. And I always end up on the bridge of reason. And the desired shore of faith is the last thing that I turn to. And every time I'm presented with this, I am grateful that God doesn't make too difficult of terms with me, because I would have been like done by now. Thank you.
Thanks, Don. Okay, I want to point out something. The big book, it has you look at step one and two for 59 pages plus the doctor's opinion. There's a lot of reading about the first and second step. And the reason for that is that it's, I think it's trying to break through this mental, rational reason that we're talking about. So our basic text talks about how our mind is good and our self-sufficiency is good, but it doesn't go far enough because it doesn't solve our fear problem. And that, and so being a true alcoholic that would rather do it herself, I think I can figure everything out. And so it took years of me seeing that I was my own worst enemy, and I was my own, I created the self crisis that happened, and where my dependencies became demands, and that I was attached to so many outcomes. You know, I have this thing that I keep on my refrigerator, and I hand out to my sponsees these little magnets that say, show up, pay attention, tell the truth, and don't be attached to the outcome. And one of them said to me, everything's fine until that last sentence. And I said, yeah, that's the whole thing right there. And it still is so for me. I want you to realize that each step has a principle behind it, a spiritual principle. Our 12th step says to practice these principles in all of our fears. When I finally can admit that I can't figure it out, I finally have some type of honesty, and I'm also surrendered. Those are two principles that happened to me. When I come to believe that there is some power that can restore me to some sound thinking and balance, that requires the principles of hope as well as open-mindedness. And those are principles that I start to become familiar with and as an experience. And so now what happens is that they go into how this thing works, you know, and they read our 12 steps. And then afterwards, it brings you in the big book to like step three. And all of a sudden in the big book, they start to, it's in italics. You are now at step three. Step three is a few pages. Step four is a few more. If you add up all the pages for the rest of the steps, they don't add up to 59 pages. So our real culprit is thinking that we are God, that we keep playing God, that we can figure this out, that we know the best outcome. And throughout the years, I realized that I'm the last one to know the best outcome. In fact, my aunt had that poem on her wall, Desiderata, and there was this line in it near the end that says, even though I don't think so, the world is unfolding as it should. I don't think the world's unfolding as it should. But when I can look at that and I can say, No, I don't think it, but I do believe that you know what's going on, God, and I don't. And I don't have to figure that out. I think I become right-sized. So we're now going to go into the idea of making this decision to turn our will and our lives over to the God of our experience or friendship, or I don't like to say understanding, because if I understood God, I'd be God, and I'm not God. So it's the God of my experience. And my experience has been one that is more of a friend that has helped me. God working through my original sponsors and my sponsors now. It's one of a friendship as well as one that gives me clear direction about what is. It's more about reality than it is about making me feel good. And that takes faith and willingness and trust to make that decision. Those are principles that we start to get. In other words, it's almost that thing about God is spelled R-I-S-K. It's that thing where they say that when you do a third step, it's like you walk to the edge of all the light you know, all the knowledge you know, and faith is going to be that you're going to step off knowing that you will find either solid ground or find wings to fly. And that's what it takes. And I'm not going to step off if I do not believe that my God is a best friend. Let me tell you, I mean, I was a bad, there's a lot of things that happened to me that, I didn't know about any power, but it says the care. And I know that I could turn my life over to Missy's care, because she has the best for me, even no matter how bad I am or what she has to tell me truthfully. I first started working with Missy. I lived in Maine. She lived in Massachusetts. She came to my place. There was a situation going on in her life. And what I had to tell her, she wished that she had never come up to Maine. Let me tell you. She wanted to get in her car and go back. But if I didn't care about her at the level that I care about her, I never would have told her that this wasn't about them. It was about her. And we needed to look at her, not at whatever the situation was. So that takes faith to believe. It took me faith to believe in the 10 days she had me. So this is kind of like making a decision. And if you can turn it over to your sponsor and listen to your sponsor, how much better could it be if you turned it over to the care of your best friend that's really present all the time? And that's the way I look at it. And so when we get to page in my book, when we get to the ABCs, which is on page 60, it says that I'm an alcoholic and I can't manage my own life, or I'm an Al-Anon and I just can't manage my own life. I realize that no matter what. And that probably no human power can relieve me of my alcoholism, or shall we just use the ism, I sponsor myself. No human power can relieve me of me sponsoring myself. That only God could and would if he was sought. So that meant that that I'm a human power, so I can't relieve myself. All right. And so this means that now we're going to move into some other power that we're going to build a relationship with. And then it goes on here and it says, being convinced that I'm at step three, which is that I've decided, I put everything into the I when I read this. If you're reading it with me, it's page 60, 61. I'm going to just read this as if I was doing this. I've already done this because I did this inventory already. And I'll tell you why. And I'll tell you why. My life is unmanageable. When this pandemic started, I was here in Florida, and I was due to go on May 1st. I was going traveling. I'll tell you about that in a little bit. Missy and I were going to do a retreat up in Maine. And then from there, Don and I were going to get in our little trusty converted vans and go across Canada and end up in Detroit and from there, we were going to Fellowship of the Spirit in Colorado. From there, I was going to others to be in New Mexico. I mean, my life was planned, right? And when I left on May 1st to do this, my daughter, who was moving from Washington down here to Florida to look for a home, was going to move in here in my home and be here. And so the pandemic hits. And there's three or four of us. I'm in a retirement park, 55 plus. There's three or four of us that are in the program. And we decided we would have a deck meeting on my deck out here. And so we do that in the morning. And I realized during that there was a lot of talk. There was a gerbil in my head, and it was going round and round and round. And it was all about this pandemic, let me tell you. And I realized I wasn't the only one on the deck doing that. And some moment of clarity after maybe a meditation, I realized that my life was unmanageable and that I was powerless over something called this COVID pandemic. And I realized probably the whole world was. And I realized that my life was unmanageable and I was powerless, and so was everybody in the world. The difference was that I have 11 more steps I can work. And was I willing to pick up a pen and take a look at this pandemic with this process I'm going to show you? And I said, why? Well, why not? I mean, I've never gone through this before, so what could I share with you if I haven't done anything in regard to these spiritual tools? And so I'm going to read you what I did. So I'm convinced that, you know, I need to turn my will and my life over in regard to this pandemic. So what does this mean? What do I do? The first requirement is that I be convinced that my life run on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, I am almost always in collision with something or somebody in regard to this pandemic, even though my motives are good. I live by self-propulsion. I'm kind of like an actor. I want to kind of run the whole show on how everybody's supposed to look at this pandemic. I'm forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the people in the park and everywhere about this pandemic. If only my arrangements would stay put, if only people would do as I wish, the show would be great. Everybody, including myself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, I may sometimes be quite virtuous. I might be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, I may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. But like most humans, I have varied traits. So what usually happens? The show doesn't come off very well. I begin to think life doesn't treat me right. I decide to exert myself even more. I become on the next occasion still more demanding or gracious, as the case may be. Still, the play doesn't suit me. I admit that I might be somewhat at fault. I'm sure that other people are more to blame. I become angry, indignant, self-pitying. What is my basic trouble? Am I not really a self-seeker, even when trying to be kind? Am I not the victim of the delusion that I can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of the world if I only manage well? That's a big piece. That's a big piece for me. I remember when I really joined Al-Anon, I came in to Al-Anon again with a definite qualifier. And I remember I told my story and told my story and told my story. And you people were so kind, and you let me tell my story and tell my story and tell my story. And then one day as we were going around that room, and they came to me and they said, Mary, and I said, I can't tell myself this story, let alone you. I want to know, how do I get out of this? Because my problem was not what I was saying it was. It was my reaction to the problem that was my problem. And that took a long time for me to see that. So my reaction to the pandemic is my problem. Not that the pandemic's going to do whatever it's going to do. My qualifier did whatever she was going to do. My reaction to her became the problem. And it would have been to the point that I would seek relief through alcohol. And that's when it really became my problem. For me, this is my thoughts. I believe underneath every Alky, if you scratch them hard enough, you find an Al-Anon, because defective human relationships are the cause of all of our woes, including our alcoholism. That's said in our step 8 and our 12 and 12. I used to say, why isn't this in the first step? It's because we don't know who the heck we are until we've done the first 7 steps. But after that, we better see that our actions have been defective. And Bev used to say to me, my original sponsor, she said to me, you're responsible for your actions and how they affect others. I went, what? I thought I was just responsible for my actions. I don't want to be involved in you. And so I had a lot of learning to do in this program. So when it comes to this stuff that I'm talking to you about, I realize that my reaction is the problem. It's not the pandemic. The pandemic's going to happen. Yeah, it's going to create things. It's not the alcoholic. It's not my kid. It's not whether or not I usually do a demonstration about this, my mother's cat that was naughty and would jump on my cat. So some sponsee said, maybe you better you got a resentment, do an inventory. And it took me a long time to realize that that inventory taught me more about who I was as a person if it didn't do it my way than anything else. So, but today I'm going to demonstrate this other thing. God, how long are we going to be doing this? You people really are troopers here. You're all just hanging in here, aren't you? God, you know, loves
sharing, Mary, if you want to, or questions.
Huh?
You can open it up for sharing or questions.
Not until I get into this other part. There'll be questions as soon as I get into this other part.
Until you're done.
So what's happening here is that I have to see that I am a victim of the delusion. I can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if I only manage well. That has an awful lot that had to be looked at from a lot of angles. That was how I was raised, and that was true. If I managed well, you people would like me. And if I did, starting to rain here now. I realized that I was other esteemed. I wasn't God esteemed. I was whether or not you people liked me or not. That esteemed me. It had nothing to do with a presence, caring, my best friend liking me. It had to do with whether or not you liked me, and then it's okay, then God's okay. But if what I did to make you like me was terrible. It was terrible because it broke my soul. I went against my values. Remember, we're going to do a fearless moral inventory here. All right. So I'm self-centered. I love this part here. I'm an actor. I'm self-centered. I'm egocentric, as people like to call it. I love this part, this next sentence, because it took me forever to understand it. And here I am, one of these people. He is like the retired businessman who lolls in the Florida sunshine in the winter, complaining about the sad state of the nation, about the pandemic. I get laughing. I didn't understand that at all, but that's because I was so self-centered. I couldn't understand that self-centeredness. Anyway, so it goes on about self-centeredness, and then it tells me this. Whatever my problems are, my protestations are not, most of us are, am I not more concerned about myself, my resentments, and my self-pity? Selfishness and self-centeredness. Hear that. That, I think, is the root of my troubles. I'm driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. And I step on the toes of my fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes people hurt me, seemingly without provocation. But I invariably find that at some time in the past, I have made a decision based on me, 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 the alcoholic opera. That later placed me in a position to be hurt. So my troubles, I think, are basically of my own making. So there again, it's not necessarily what's happening out there. It's my reaction to what's happening is that becomes my own making. and they arise out of me. And I'm an extreme example of self-will run riot, though I usually don't think so. Above everything, I must be rid of this selfishness. I must, or it kills me. And it was years went by, and I finally realized that does not say on that page, I must get rid of my alcohol, or it kills me. It says my selfishness, or it kills me. That's why it says that once the alcohol is removed, the main problem centers in my mind, that bottles are but symbols. There is something going on in me that isn't right. And this is where I get a chance to work on emotional sobriety. And so I must get rid of it, or it kills me. Now, it tells me the only way to do this is God makes that possible. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of myself without that, my best friends, my God, my experiences aid. And I have a lot of moral and philosophical convictions, but I can't live up to them, even if I wanted to. Neither could I reduce my self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on my own power. I had to have this presence help. I have to have this in order for me to get any emotional sobriety. So the first thing I have to do is quit playing God. And I'm going to revert to something that Don Pritz used to say. We're here to do God's work, not his job. We're here to do God's work, not his job. 5 years it took me to understand that. And when I'm doing God's work, God's job, I have to know the outcome. That's God's job, to know the outcome. So as I looked at the pandemic, as I realized that I had no idea what was going on, my thoughts were, God, there's something big happening here. God, please don't let me be asleep wondering if the cat box is empty when you show whatever's happening here. There's some big thing going on, because it's not only just happening to me, it's happening to the whole world. What's happening? And for years now, some of my sponsees will tell you, I've been saying, I think this 12-step program is the most spiritual, profound program in the world today. I truly, truly believe that we are the pioneers of this program. Do you know that? We're in our first 100 years. That's all. And we have 12 steps to learn how to deal with. And when this big thing's going on and the whole world is, life's unmanageable, we need to be sharpening our kit of spiritual tools and applying these things, because we're being called to be able to give this whole thing away in order to receive the dividends that we need to do. I think we can be little instruments of God. I truly believe, you know, I liken this, and I think every single one of you are a candle. Do you know that? I know that when I get in a dark place, I call my sponsor, and she's like a little candle that lights the light. And then I can take one more step until I get back to my connection deep down inside, because something's blocking me. Something's not where I'm not feeling the presence of God, where I don't feel safe and protected. And that's blocked. And I immediately know when that happens. I immediately know. I also know that in step 10, our book talks about one of the promises is a position where you end up in neutrality. And it defines neutrality, safe and protected. Isn't that what I've just been talking about? I feel, when I'm in a place of neutrality, I'm safe and protected. And that means I'm in the world of the spirit in step 10, if I've done the prior steps. And when that happens to me, I have emotional sobriety. I cannot do this. And she read the thing on emotional sobriety. I outlined quite a few of those things because I love that reading that Bill wrote. And I love how it says, the primary healing circuit on and outgoing love of God's creation and his people, by means of which I avail myself of his love for me. It is most clear that the real current can't flow until my paralyzing dependencies are broken and broken at depth. And so that means that we're going to have to take a good look at what's happening inside of us and where we're blocking things, which brings me to the fact that we're going to do like the third step prayer. I don't know. I know you have a prayer. I'm so sorry. Is there a third step prayer in your literature, or do you use ours? Do you use ours? Okay, thank you. All right, so I'm going to tell you how I do this, all right? It's on page 63. It says, if I'm ready now to take a look at what's blocking me and about in my, and I don't like the reactions I'm doing in regard to the pandemic, I'm now going to demonstrate to you how I work the fourth step. And I want you to hear what the first step says. We made a searching and fearless moral inventory. It does not say we make a fearful garbage inventory, does it? It doesn't say that, except that's the way I heard it for years. It says that we make a searching and fearless moral inventory. So I'm going to find out what my morals are, what my values are, and where I've been going against them is the purpose of the fourth step. So that when I finish with writing what I'm doing, I'm going to have a set of values and principles that I'm going to live by going through this pandemic. All right? I'm going to try to live by with God's help. Because when you finish a fourth and fifth step, now I'm going to do a fourth and fifth step with you. I'm going to tell you that at the end of this, I have intellectual enlightenment about where I've been going against my values. And I have intellectual enlightenment on how I've been doing it. But if I do not take this from step to 6 through 12, then all I have is intellectual enlightenment. Very important for you to hear me on this. For a long time, I would do these first 6 steps. And, you know, that's half of 12 steps. And half measures will avail you nothing. Yes, your self-sufficiency will let you do it differently. And if you're as willful as I am, I can do it for a long time. But it wasn't solving my fear problem. And I realized that I have to do all the steps. And I'll get to that. Oh, I've got some time, so we'll get to that, won't we? You ladies that have done this with me, have I missed anything? Because I wing it. I don't know.
I have one thing to say, Mary.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
My name's Missy. I'm an alcoholic. It's very quick. I remember after the third step prayer, there was no amen. And it's not until the seventh step that we have the amen. Which gave me a lot of relief. Because, you know, when I figured that out, I said, oh, I've got more to do. Which, of course, I did. So I just wanted to put that in there.
Jump in anytime, because you know me, I'll forget stuff. Okay. So for you that have a book, I'm going to tell you that once you do this, what Missy and I do as a demonstration of the third step is we say it like this, I'll get on my knees. We don't so much get on our knees anymore because we're old now. But you know, we used to get on our knees and demonstrate this, didn't we?
I can get on my knees, Mary.
Right. It's very awkward getting up, though, Missy. It really
is. I can get on my knees.
I know. All right. Well, you can do that. I'm not going to. This is what I say. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self in regard to this pandemic, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those that I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always.